So, you know, like the most shocking thing to me was the channels of bass. Like many there were, like 9 channels of bass. Actually, it was, that wasn't the most shocking thing. The most shocking thing, I retract that shocking statement. The most shocking thing was actually how geeky they'd gone down the rabbit hole with all of the bass gear, with all of the basses, with all of the bass amps, like the whole thing. Like how far down that rabbit hole they'd gone to recreate the different sounds on the album. I think it was just, shockingly good.
I was also not expecting that level of depth in like gear world.
Yeah, it's like, and you know, I'll just point out as well, I'm not normally in them situations as well, so maybe it's normal. Maybe, I don't know, like, I'm not, every week I don't get to sort of like, you know, swan around, lurk. Actually, I wasn't swanning around. We were lurking around.
We were lurking.
Lurking around backstage at the Sphere. And if you have no idea what we were talking about or what we are talking about right now, basically, just over a week ago, Ian and I, we were invited out to hang out with, well, U2's penultimate concert of their stint at the Sphere. Adam Clayton and his bass tech, Stuart Morgan, shout out to them both. They're friends of SBL, and they reached out. We got invited over, and it was just outrageous.
It was outrageous.
Yeah.
Stuart brought us back. We got to see the whole Sphere from like sort of all angles, right? We got to go backstage. We went under the stage and checked out all of the bass gear, the guitar gear as well, and got to meet Stuart Morgan, who was amazing. That, like, Ben, Adam Clayton's bass tech for 30 years.
I was about to say 30 years. That's outrageous.
I think that's about right. And then another one of Adam's bass techs, what was maybe the most shocking to me, was that there were two.
Yeah.
Bernie.
If I ever have a bass tech, I'll be like, well, you know.
If I ever have a bass tech, you may as well have two. Man, because Stuart was, Adam travels, I think he was playing 9 basses on the show.
Yeah. And we've got all of this sort of like, all of these cool sort of like, you know, photos that we got backstage. You got bits of video and stuff like that we'll also share. So if you've ever wondered, you know, what it's like, you know, back, I don't know. I don't think anybody's wondered what it's like backstage at the Sphere, but maybe they've wondered what it's like backstage at a U2 concert. We've got all of this incredible stuff to share, like pictures of the basses, pictures of some of the guitars as well, the pedal board that they were using. Like, it was, outrageous.
Wild. Yeah. So Stuart was handling all of the switching, pedal switching and tuning, and, you know, and then Bernie, the other bass tech, was handling running up the stairs with the basses for all the changes.
They were so cool as well. Like, just to shout them all out. They were just so, it was incredible to meet them all. They're just like great. Just so welcoming. Like, they weren't sort of like, there was just like zero ego. They were just like awesome. It was a great hang, and it was just, just like mind blowing to be part of that thing. Listen, if you're ready to go from watching your bass heroes to playing like them, then you should absolutely check out the SBL Academy. And that's because the SBL Academy is so much more than this YouTube channel that you're enjoying right now. It covers all levels and styles and is loved by over 30,000 bass players around the world. You get more than 200 step-by-step courses taught by the best instructors like John Patitucci, Michael League, Ian Allison, myself, and many more. Simply put, you're going to learn how to play the bass like a pro from the pros themselves. And that's not all. You'll also get our groundbreaking step-by-step development programs like Player's Path and Learning Pathways. Just imagine how your bass playing is going to improve once you're inside the SBL Academy. Well, you don't have to imagine anymore. Simply visit trysbl.com to claim your 14-day free trial today. Okay, let's get back to the video. Should we just show people a clip of the Sphere? Because, like, we're talking about this thing called the Sphere, and a bunch of people might not even know what it is. It's an incredible venue. They built it out in Las Vegas, and U2 were the first band to do a residency there. And in true U2 form, they pushed it to the limit. Like, it's just absolutely incredible. It is. Well, let me show you. We can talk over as well while I'm showing this, showing this clip. So you'll see in the set there. So this is the Sphere. So basically, it's a 20,000 person arena. But the difference is that you're in a massive bubble and everything is a video screen. So wherever you look, it's a video screen. Above your head, it's a video screen. Down the sides of you, it's a video screen. So it's like this incredible immersive experience. It's just absolutely outrageous.
Imagine like IMAX. If you've ever been to an IMAX theater, it's just like the next evolution of an IMAX theater. Graphics can go all around you, completely above you. Do you remember the moment, Scott, where there was all that code that was traveling up the screen and then it created a ceiling and it came down and it felt like we were going to get squashed by the ceiling?
Yeah, they can make you feel like you're in a cube. So even though you're in this massive big bubble, right, they can actually make it, the perception of that, they can turn it into a cube. And then the ceiling like comes down in your head. So everybody's like, whoa. Oh. And then another part we were like watching and it felt like the entire audience was being tipped backwards. It was so, I've never experienced anything like that. I've spoken to obviously a bunch of friends afterwards to share my experiences of going to this concert. And I was like, just look, if you see any artists playing at the Sphere, and you're into the artist, it is just worth going to see them there. Like it might cost you a couple of thousand dollars if you're living in the UK and you need to do flights and hotels and stuff like that. But even if it was to just travel out there, check out the gig and fly back, which is what I did. Like it's worth it because it's just incredible.
We met some people out there that had done just that too. There were people from Ireland, right?
Yeah.
They were coming over to see the show, second to last show. They were filming it. It was like a big to do. I mean, do you remember also Larry Mullins?
Oh yeah, there? Larry was there.
Am I saying that correctly? Is his name Larry Mullins or is it Larry Mullen Jr.?
I've got no idea. Mullen. I think Alan, he's Larry
Alan,
Mullen.
Thank you. Alan in the background. Mullen.
It's Mullen Jr. Yeah. And he's the, obviously he's been he is the drummer for the band, but he had surgery, so he couldn't do the residency. So he had another guy standing in for him called Bram, who did a great job. But it was actually the first time that Larry had seen the gig ever in history. It's the first time he'd watch you too.
Right. I leaned over to Scott and said, because we realized that Larry was there. They shouted him out and he stood up like a Greek god. He's a beautiful man.
He is good looking like fella.
Did the wave.
The royal wave.
and I like leaned over to Scott and said, do you realize this is the first time that Larry is seeing a U2 show? That's a trip, man.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Yeah.
First time in.
I
wonder what he thought.
These guys are pretty good. These guys, they, you know what? If they keep on going, they might go somewhere with this.
I bet he thought partly what every musician thinks when they see a show is like, I could do that a little better. You know, I bet he thought.
I wondered if he thought to himself, if I was him, because I thought of this as well, I was like, what was the emotion of watching that?
Yeah.
And for me, I would have been like, and maybe it's a sliding scale, but I would have been like, maybe I should have done the gig. Maybe, you know, but maybe he didn't have the actual ability to do so because of the surgery and all of that.
He's had surgery and I mean, I will say he looked pretty dang good when he stood up and waved, but that does not necessarily mean he could have played a 2-hour set behind the drums.
It was really incredible though. And, you know, just to, I just like some funny stuff as well, just to mention it, is that, you know, obviously Ian and I, we're not the rock star types, right? So we found ourselves backstage, right? So we're backstage, all access. And we're like, you know, sort of like loitering, creeping around like a, you know, a pair of bass nerds. And we found ourselves in the backstage area, you know, drinking the, like, what did you say? Like sipping root beers in the corner. Like,
but my wife said. Emily was like, oh, are you a couple of bass nerds like drinking root beers out of a straw in the corner, you know? Essentially we were. Yeah.
It was awesome though. And, you know, and backstage, we were actually hanging backstage and I've looked across the room and I was like, hey, that's either Oz Noy, who's this like legendary guitar player, right? Legend. Yeah. I'm like, either that's Oz Noy oh, he's got a weird doppelganger somewhere around. Like, but why would he be backstage at this U2 concert? That's the thing that was so confusing. Anyway, I forgot about it. Five minutes went by and there's a tap on my shoulder and I like, turn. It's like, he's like, bass man. I was like, holy shit, it's Osnoy. So it was Osnoy. So it was great. I've never met Oz before. And it was really fantastic to be able to hang with him. I've actually got some pictures.
Yeah, we sat by him too at the gig, which was fun.
Yeah, so there we go. So there's a picture.
So familiar. Yeah.
And he was with his friend Conrad. So Conrad, that you can see here next to Ian, he's a bass player from New York. He's doing like a bunch of Broadway shows, but he's also played with Rod Stewart and a bunch of other artists as well. So it was just a great hang. But I've got like a bunch of photos here to share as well. Should we dive in, Ian? Should we start with like that bass that you're playing?
Sure, yeah. So, because we got to tour all the basses, and one of the basses that Adam played, and I believe maybe your favorite of the evening, Scott.
It was my favorite, yeah.
Was a favorite. Gibson Les Paul signature bass. Now, everybody sees these and they think it's the Epiphone Jack Cassidy, and sometimes it is, but take a look at that headstock. If it says Gibson, they made this in the 70s, 74, I believe, maybe yeah. 74, 5, 6. And I think fewer than 1,000 of them were made. I think something like 600 or 700-ish
really?
Were made. Yes.
So the like yes. Rocking Horse shit. Yeah.
Yep. And this is crazy. Check this out. So there's Adam with one. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see it. But Scott, do you know what two guitars this bass pays homage to?
I don't know, man, because it's not like I've never held one, but maybe I have right here.
Atta boy. Okay, so yes. Hey, can you tell me? Take a look at the horns and tell me what two guitars is this bass modeled after?
Okay, I would
guess. It's a quiz, dude.
335 and a Les Paul.
Hell yeah, dude. Mm-mm. Nicely done. 335 up top, right?
You can see that. Yeah, horn. That top horn there is obviously yep. a 335, and the bottom one is a Les Paul. And what was this instrument called? By the way, this is at that bass there that you can see here. That is the bass here. That was us lurking. This is basically like under the stage at the Sphere. Look at that. And this was the bass. So, like, what's the deal with these then?
The deal is this is called a Les Paul signature bass. There was a matching guitar. It just has one pickup in the center, and you can vary the impedance so it can go from bright and kind of quiet to big, dark, loud. I mean, it just sounds like. Big
you
chocolatey.
Asked Stuart, right? You asked Stuart what setting Adam had. Can you remember what he told you?
I think he said, what did he say? It was either on the brightest setting or the I think it was actually the darkest setting. So check this out. I usually play it in the middle. But if you play it all the way dark. Oh no, actually this is the more mild setting. Brighter.
Got it.
Quieter. Louder, darker, and then loudest, darkest.
That sounds incredible.
It's really cool. Yeah, and I don't remember actually what Stuart said about what setting he had it on. I like to keep mine in the middle, but that's just me. It's an awesome bass. Check out
that. Like for me, it was that, yeah. Too. Like is yours, yeah, because that was like Adam's, wasn't it? Like I wish I'd taken a photo of the back of the neck actually, because the back of the neck was like flame mahogany on Adam's.
And oh yeah, just, yeah, that's right.
It was beautiful, yeah. And when he came out, the bass that he was using for predominantly all of it were like basically like variations of a P bass. That was sort of like the vibe he was going for the gig. And this was kind of like the breakaway from that. And for me, I'm not sure whether it was just because it was something different, but for me, this was my favorite sound of the basses that he played. This was the one that I was just like,
yeah, you leaned over to me during the show and you're like, that sounds great. Like you made a point of being like that. And you even told Adam that too, I feel like the next day, right? You were like,
Yeah. Hey, we met for lunch the next day and I was like, That's the bass. In fact, and just to show everybody what bass he was using for most of it, well, not most of it, but it was this bass here. So it's the Adam Clayton Signature Warwick. And you can see it's got Seymour Duncan quarter pounders, massive pull pieces in there.
Yeah, look at those pull pieces.
The butts of bullets, aren't they?
Right.
And this is like he played different basses. He also played Sparkle P bass. I've got a shot of that. I think maybe a shot of you holding that bass, actually. And I'll have a look in a minute. So that was the... And then he played a leather P bass. I've also got a shot of that to share with people. But this, for me...
Wait, did you say leather P bass?
A leather P... We'll get there, dude. We'll get there.
All right, sorry.
So, but this was the bass I think he played most. And he, again, he, like I spoke to him about this, he loves this bass. It's really, really simple. It's just got the P bass, but it's a reverse P. So what you've got here is, the upper side, the lower strings, the, that coil there is further towards the bridge. And then you've got the higher strings further towards the neck. When on a normal P bass, it will be the exact opposite of that. Right.
Right.
So this one will be over here and this one will be back there. Sorry for anybody listening to this, I've got my cursor on the screen and I'm wiggling it around. So, yeah, consider going over to YouTube and checking out the video. And if you are watching on us on YouTube, can I tell you something crazy, Ian?
Yeah, of course.
Something insane.
Yes, please. I can't wait.
Maybe even more insane than us going backstage at YouTube. Maybe not. But 60% of the people that watch this channel, 60% of the people that have watched this channel haven't heard of the bass players agreement. Do you know what the bass players agreement is? The bass players agreement.
I might be part of that 60% because I don't know what it is.
Look, check it out. The bass players agreement is if you have watched more than two videos on this channel, please consider subscribing. That's the bass players agreement. We are here to serve you with awesome bass content. But today, or this year, should I say, this year, we've got a big hairy goal of hitting 1.5 million subscribers on YouTube. Oh. And man, we would absolutely love it if you could help us do that and be part of our mission to hit that by the end of the year. So, if you are here today watching this, be part of our bass players agreement. Hit the subscribe and like button and be part of our you know, our mission to hit 1.5 million subscribers anyway. And you can do so as well, Ian, if you want. You can be part of the bass players agreement.
I need to like go and like, God, make sure I'm subscribed. I got to check.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. So as I was saying, this is the main bass that he played. But I'll tell you what bass I wish that he had played as well. Check this bad boy out.
I know you love this.
You don't like this, do you? I love it. I saw this. I was like, oh, it's an Adam Clayton, another Adam Clayton signature Warwick. If I didn't mention it, by the way, this is a Adam Clayton signature Warwick. This is as well. I think it's badass, dude. Look at that thing.
I struggle is that with not that headstock. Fancy? Although it's totally like a buzzard. You know what it reminds me of course, I feel like the headstock anyway is homage to Entwistle,
exactly,
buzzard,
yeah,
bass.
Yeah.
But I get it. I mean, hey, look, if I'm in a band, like a super rock starry band that's been playing together for how long has YouTube been a band? 50 years, maybe?
Dude, long enough.
Yeah, I think they've been a band for 50
long
years.
Enough,
I think the ad went up on the bulletin board about 50 years ago, you know, of Larry and Adam looking for bandmates.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, Adam Clayton can play anything he wants. I see that, though. I will say I prefer my Adam Clayton to be rocking something more classic.
More like a P or a Gibson.
Or this. Yeah, man. Hey, I will say, what did you think, Scott? Here's another shocker. How about that action?
He's got a what I would call a farmer's action. You know, like a far, you know, like Adam doesn't mess around. Put it that way. Like he has got a man's action. Like not a man's action. I'm a man, but I'm not a farmer. You know, like tough, like leathery. Tough. Oh yeah. Like I picked up that bass.
Working
and I was like,
hands.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm talking about them strings looking like this on the side of the board, you know, like where you walk by somebody's rack of basses and the E string is like this.
Exactly. Like, that. Yeah.
Yo,
but he
that
plays
is wild.
All the way through though. Like one of his really sort of like the things that jumps out to me when I watch.
Yes. He's swinging.
He's right. Swinging all the way through. So if you guys haven't seen that technique before, basically, you know, you can play like that or like swinging through the actual note. And in my mind, I visualize it like a golf ball being hit by a golf club. Swinging through the ball instead of sort of like laying the golf club against the ball and then like that. It's actually bosh, swinging all the way through. And that's...
Yeah.
He really hits that thing. And that's part of the attack that he gets on the sound, right? He gets that big gong, 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 like that classic rock sound. There are other people like Entwistle. You know, there's a bunch of players that is a real signature part of their sound. And I think that more people should be talking about it, actually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because there's a bunch of ways to play, and that revealing the top end character of a note, either with a pick or slap or fingers, is kind of like what gives a player their distinct sound. You know, like if you think about players like session players that maybe play really appropriately for the song, and they, you know, it's not that they don't have their own sound. It's just harder to identify. It's the kind of like the smashers, where if you're thinking about Flea, right? Or Adam Clayton in this case, or Geddy Lee, or Les Claypool, or people that like attack Entwistle. Attackers all seem to have more of like a defined iconic sound. Doesn't mean it's going to get you hired in a band, but think about like in your band, maybe. I wonder if maybe you go for something more kind of distinct by attacking your bass in a certain way, because that's what I see. The iconic players.
Can I just call it out that I've played in sort of like, you know, rock bands in the past, like bass and stuff like that. I just did a crap job. Like now I'm sort of like 25, maybe 28 years into sort of like the bass geek. I've gone down this rabbit hole for 28 years, right?
Yeah.
And now if I look back, I've played in rock bands. I had a crap sound for that band. What I'd done is I'd just sort of like got my sound and tried to pull that into, and there's a place for that. But when I listen to them, like guys that are just killing it within that genre, like rock, it can't, like for me, it's just such a signature part of the sound. I think that, So maybe in the future, if I ever get to do that again and play in sort of like a full on rock band, I'm going to be kicking the crap out of my bass. My bass is going to be weeping.
Hey, you're hitting me.
You're hitting me. Should we share some more? Should we share some more penny pickle piper picket whatever? Share some more shots of under the stage.
You got it. Yes. Yeah.
Should we jump back onto the stage? I'll share some more some pics because I just get like super excited when I do this. This is the Sparkle jazz bass. Did he play the jazz bass a lot?
I don't remember seeing him play the jazz bass, actually. I don't know that he did.
I think he did, yeah, but I don't know.
You know, I think there were 9 basses in rotation. Here's the Sparkle J, which is a custom shop. Yeah. I believe a signature series too. And I think that they had then 9 other basses that were all like sort of duplicates or just backups to all of
Got
these.
Got it, yeah.
So they had 2 racks. There was 9 in the rack that was here, you know, to the right of Stuart in the photo here, his right, our left. And then there was another rack over on the other side that had the backups. And they weren't all identical, but they were all like tuned the same, set up the same, probably similar output settings on the knobs, all that, so that if one of the main ones went down, Stuart could hand another one to Bernie, who would run it out to Adam.
So we've got the Sparkle one there. What else have we got? Obviously, he played the signature Warwick as well. He played that a bunch. He played the Gibson here that we've got. Yeah. I was trying to take that one home.
You were.
Oh, we played this leather bass as well. The leather bass. So we actually recorded this, so check this out.
It's what they have to do is they have to make the body thinner to accommodate the leather. So the actual wood inside is slightly thinner than a normal P-bass.
The early P basses were actually.
And that's the joint, that little ridge around the side.
Yes. No, I don't know the measurement. Yeah. I wish I did.
Yeah. Mine's, I've got one that's slightly thinner. Okay. Yeah. And I find it, I don't know, it feels nice when they are slightly thinner. Yeah. Like obviously this won't be now because it's got the leather one, I guess, that makes it.
And if you're not watching the pod, what we're seeing here is there's a thinner bit of body wood underneath and this like thick leather wrap.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a matte finish, like a matte gray black finish with then the gold anodized guard. That was a beautiful bass. I mean, it's so Spinal Tap though, dude, right? It's like, what do you do when you've had all the bases and you've, you know, it's like, could you wrap it in leather, please?
Yeah, you've run out of ideas. I mean, sticks of leather on it. Oh. Sticks of leather on it. Hey, dude, yeah. We're going to keep on going with the basses, but should we have an interlude? And this was the spirit of the evening was this. Obviously, we were having no fun. We had no fun there.
it was so wild to be there. I mean, you know, like such a good time. Everybody was having a good time, right? Second to the last show.
Yeah.
We were just goofing around and just, you know, and also sometimes, I don't know about you, Scott, but sometimes I'm at shows. I don't put my hands in the air and clap when the artist asks me to clap because like, hey, I'm a musician too. I know all these tricks. I'm going to just, sip my drink and be restrained. But I went for it, dude.
Dude, we were clapping.
Like a teenager.
Hey,
we were clapping.
I had
my hands in the air.
Yeah, dude, did you think about like I legit had this thought. I was like, you know, on flying there or whatever. I can't remember what it was, but let's imagine it was flying there. I think it was actually flying there. I'm flying there, right? And I was like, huh, haven't been to a gig with him before. I wonder what his vibe is like at a gig.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I was like, is he going to be like going for it all out? Or is he going to be cool, collected, calm? I was what's the vibe? I was like, am I going to be? Because normally I am exactly that. I'm sort of like, I'm the muso. I'm like,
yes.
And I shouldn't be. I shouldn't do that. Like, what a dick. Right? Yeah. I call myself out right now. I just want to enjoy shows more. I think that I should do that. Anyway, so all that said, so we were like standing next to each other, like two weird looking twins with black glasses on and freaking hats, looking like a couple that had decided to sort of like, you know, match. Like, oh, what glasses are you wearing, dear? Oh, I'm wearing the black rims. Oh, I'll wear them too. Anyway, so we're like a couple of bass losers at the gig, right? Yeah. And we were going for it. We were like,
we were going for it.
Yeah, it was awesome. There was you couldn't not do it. It was
obscene. Moments too, because we were standing by Osnoy and his friend Conrad, and they were cool. I mean, they were like a little more reserved, and I thought of it in my mind. I was like, Osnoy is going to see me like, put your hands in the air, you know, and sing. I mean, dude, when they played With or Without You, I cried. I was just going to try to sing it. I'm not going to sing it. I sang the things that you were supposed to sing.
Please
and
do.
I didn't. Dude, I didn't care. I didn't care because guess what? I wanted to be me. I wanted to honor the 14-year-old, right?
Yeah,
that fell in love with you two. And that was actually super fun. Like to just go for it and not be cool guy, you know, being like, evaluating,
isn't it? Like,
and critiquing.
There's some sort of like weird sort of like you get when you become sort of like a muso, you get this sort of like weird sort of like curse put on you. Like, oh,
yeah.
You can't lose yourself at a gig anymore because now you, and I just think that's bullshit. And I do that. And I've definitely felt that tension before. Like, and that's why I felt the tension beforehand when I was on the plane. I was like,
I wonder what it's going to be like. What did you think I was going to be like?
I thought you were going to be into it, actually. Mm. I thought you were going to be full into it.
Yeah.
And then when we got there, can I be honest?
Yes.
I was like, oh no, he's not. Like, it's the cool vibe. Like, I will replay.
Really?
Yeah, I thought you were going to be sort of like giving it some beans, and you did go. You cracked open the can
as it went along.
It was like I didn't know, and I thought, well, I know Ian. Like Ian, well, obviously, you know, a lot of people, most people that are listening to this don't know you personally. So
yeah.
But when people meet you in person, you're actually sort of like larger than life. You're very like a social animal, I would say, right?
Yeah.
So I expected you to be like full throttle, but you actually weren't. You were reserved, cool muso, just like I do.
Oh, God, was I?
Yeah, yeah, reserved, cool muso. And then, but we fought through whatever. And then, like, we didn't embrace, but guys, it was close. We wept.
Yeah.
We were clapping. We were singing. It was awesome.
Oh, it was awesome.
Even though Oz and his friend were definitely more reserved than us, at the end of the gig, Oz turned to us and he said, "That's the best thing I've ever seen in my life." He was just like, he was like, "It's the best thing I've ever seen." It was.
That's, yeah, he did.
It was incredible.
He's like, I don't think I'm ever going to see anything better than that.
It's that's what I thought. I was like, oh, that's the level. That's the limit. Yeah. Like, it's there's no going anywhere after that. And yeah, it was just incredible. And just along those lines as well, I do apologize, guys. We're about to jump back into the bay. In fact, we're going to go amps next because, look, there was a lot of amps. And I've always wondered, you know, well, I don't know, like I'm a huge Adam Clayton fan. So I've always wondered what's going on behind the scenes. And I'm sure a lot of you are as well or have done as well. But at the end of the show, you know, everybody listen to this. You've been to a show, right? At the end of the show, everybody, well, you know, halfway through that last song, there's always some individuals that are like, okay, I'm going to get out now before the sort of like the you know, the charge of the light brigade happens and everybody gets stuck and there's, you know, and you can't get out and all of that, right? It gets really busy. At the end of this, like, U2 concert, like, the opposite happened. Nobody.
Yes. And people then, hung out.
Yeah. And at the end, like, when the band had finished, everybody kind of just stood there, kind of in shock, like,
right.
What just happened? Like, that was, it really stood out as something incredible, actually.
They ended with Beautiful Day, I believe, right? That was the very, very last tune. I think that's right. Is that right?
I think that
was the last one.
I can't remember.
And the whole entire, you know, the screen, the venue, which is a screen, was just filled with, like, colorful animals. And it was absolutely beautiful. So you didn't want to go. It felt like you had been through this incredible. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps right now just talking about it. Like,
can I share a shot?
This thing.
Can I share a shot of it? Just sort of like, this is the sort of like the penultimate song they played.
Yes.
But it's just, it's incredible. It's like your favorite U2 bass line as well. Which I think this is really cool.
Yeah, With or Without You.
Yeah, yes. But this was taken actually from the concert. So this is from the concert. And just wait till, if you haven't seen this, like, wait till you see the visual. It's outrageous. And also, just listen to the Edge's guitar. It is
it's amazing. You felt like you were in the water as well.
It was bonkers. Yeah.
And this thing is coming towards you. You're like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. Adam on the, that's the reverse P's playing there, the Warwick.
Yeah. Oh, this, the orb opens up. You're like, this, oh my
bit,
God, they're
like,
going to time it. They're going to time it to the release. The whole crowd goes,
look at that. Like, what?
The whole place is singing this. This is when I wept.
We should have embraced, man.
I know. Oh. Well, you know, is it cool to turn to your mate and give him a weepy hug?
Dude, I actually think it is.
I agree. But I don't know
we
that
missed
you
missed an opportunity there, dude.
Next time we see you two at the Sphere, we'll, shoot.
That ain't going to happen because they're not going to do it again. But I'm all for the embracing. Let's see if we can go somewhere in the future and embrace.
Deal.
Yeah, that's our sort of like, you know, challenge to ourselves. Yeah, yeah. But it was just, it was incredible. just watching that, I'm like, I don't even know where to take it. But let's go amps. Let's go amps because it was incredible. Also, just one last thing on the basses as well, which I think is interesting, is that Adam, I'm not sure he's got it on all of his P basses, but he prefers a jazz neck. He prefers a slimmer neck. So he's definitely got that on the Warwick that he's got, and he's got it on a bunch of his signature Fenders as well. But let's go amps because, as I mentioned right at the top of this conversation, there's 9 channels of amps.
Shocking. Yeah. It was shocking.
It was shocking.
It was.
Yeah.
And I mean, contrast it too to the Edge, who didn't have any amps. This is the first time Edge has gone ampless ever. Because Dallas was saying, Dallas Shue, the Edge's tech, was saying that there wasn't enough room to have all the amps and then have a spot to tune in the downstage, you know, in the backstage area of the Sphere. So they went UA pedals. But I thought then Adam wouldn't have amps, but no. Then he did. Oh,
many
and Scott
amps.
Just brought up this. I mean, look at this.
Sorry,
photo.
This,
that is,
yeah, this
Dallas
is it with
Shue.
Dallas. Yeah. And this one here
got it.
Is the one that he plays one on. So, yeah. And tell the story about the strings.
So hilarious. Context, you know, we go backstage. Stuart brings us backstage and introduces us to Dallas Shu. Dallas Shu is probably the most famous guitar tech in the world, I would say.
Yeah.
Or certainly the one that I've heard about the most. Been with Edge for over 30 years. And he was busy, but he had time for us. It was wild. He was so accommodating. He showed us the rigs, pulled out all the pedal drawers. I was dying. And then he just picked up that Rickenbacker and said, hey, here's what he uses on Even Better Than the Real Thing, and just put it around me. It was insane. And he was like, don't touch the strings. And I was like, okay. So I was sort of holding this guitar like this, you know,
meanwhile, I was like bending double stops behind here. Like I was like doing Van Halen runs on the Les Paul. I only joke, but it would have been freaking awesome.
Yeah, the one you were holding, he used on one, right? Yeah. One on Octune Baby. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable. Dallas was, you know, cool, like gave us a pick. I don't know if he gave you a pick, but he gave me a pick, dude.
I've got the pick.
Damn it. All right. Do you want to know something? I mean, good.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to know something super lame? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I've got a memory box. And and it's not big. It's something that my mum did. Like, you know, she gave me when I was like, I left home. Hey, here's the memory box. And I've got this like tiny little memory box. And like, you know, I've got like my birth certificates in there.
Right.
And like, you know, my first report card from school's in there. You don't want to see that. And like, there's, you know, there's just like little things in there. I made a book when I was like 6 years old in infant school. And that's in there with little drawings inside. Anyway.
So cool.
Nothing makes it into the memory box, dude. But the pick's in the memory box. The pick. It made it in. I said to Lisa, I got home, I went, I love that.
Put
it in the memory box.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, that was just incredible. And like Dallas spent time with us. He wasn't distracted. He was so cool. I mean, and I asked him for a photo and he was like, absolutely. And then, you know, then at the end, he's like, okay, Stuart's going to take you guys. I got to get back to work. But it was just like, man, if I were Edge's guitar tech, I probably would not want to do that, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, to, you know, oh, here come the bass nerds and they want to talk about guitars. Oh, God. I'd be like, gross. Get them out of here. But he was so sweet. And I think he could tell that we were, you know, that we were genuinely interested, genuinely respectful.
Yeah, he was awesome. He was awesome.
And then we walked over to Mr. Amp. You know, Adam Clayton, are you kidding me? The bass player's got all the amps? It was wild.
He had all the amps. And do you know the one that I was most jealous about?
Yes, same.
This bad boy.
Good Lord.
Matchless Thunderman.
Yeah, the Matchless Thunderman, which was Matchless's version of a B-15. It's bigger, you know, it's more wattage. The cabinet's bigger. And I remember when they fired it up, it sounded more modern, more hi-fi. It was sort of scooped sounding in a really pleasant way. But they had – so in the background, too, I see the Aguilars, Scott.
You've got
right?
Aguilars. So he had the Aguilars. He had the Matchless. He had two B-15 flip-top heads.
Yeah.
He had his Fender Signature amp.
Yeah, which I have back here, too. Right
have
here.
You got the amp?
I do.
Amazing.
Yeah, I've got that AC50. ACB50 is what it's called, yeah.
And what's it modeled after? What's it supposed to be doing?
To me, it's sort of like Fender's take on a B15. There's two channels. So there's kind of like a more mid-rangey channel that Adam has said he really likes. And then there's more kind of like a really, really beautiful kind of scooped sounding Fender, classic Fender channel where, you know, it's just bass and treble, really kind of smiley face, bright, buoyant
Like a basement
sound.
Type of thing.
Yeah, yes, exactly right. Yeah. It has a single 15 in it. It's 50 watts, all tube. It's heavy. It's beautiful. And he had that set up. So he had his ACB50 as well. But they had that amp set up for kind of like grungy top end or sort of bright top.
Got
and
it.
Every
okay,
amp
yeah,
was doing
yeah.
something different. You
I've
know,
got,
every
I've
amp.
Got Stuart here playing through his amp.
Oh,
so
yeah,
he was,
you do.
I think, yeah, I do. He was playing through the Warwick Signature and he was just showing us some of the Sans Amp stuff. Check it. Because he had like Sans Amp and he also had a micro. He had a few pedals. The one that jumped out to me was the Micro Pog, the big one. Yep. No, not a Micro Pog, the Pog, the big one. And he said he's a big fan of Mike Kerr of Royal Blood, but check this out.
So that's the one that had changed the most on different presets.
sets. That's just the sounds app that's doing
that. So that's our effects channel. So good. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were two DIs. There was a clean DI, Avalon, and then he was playing right there. You just heard Stuart play the riff for, was that Sunday, Buddy Sunday? No, New Year's Day. Through,
October,
through
the Sans Amp. Was it October? No, it was New Year's Day. Yeah.
He was playing that through a Sans Amp PSA-1. So dirty DI, clean DI, and then all these mic'd amps. His mic'd Fender, the mic'd Matchless, the B-15s running into the Aguilar cabs. That's six. And then there's three more.
Three more, yeah.
They had nine channels of bass.
And check it out. Stuart's doing all of the switching underneath the stage.
Yep.
So Stuart's underneath the stage doing all of the switching throughout the entire gig, which I think is wild. That's what I want.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Adam is not stepping on any pedals. Same for Edge, although Edge had a couple of controls. Maybe he had a wah or he had a few things that he was stepping on up there. But I think, am I wrong?
Oh, no. There was a big board. There's a big board. Yeah, he had a board.
He was controlling some things.
But Dallas was doing some stuff as well, wasn't he?
Yes. But Adam playing the bass only.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't switching sounds.
Just looking awesome.
What, yeah, rock star. That hair, dude.
Oh, don't. His hair. Look, do you know what I'd give to have hair like that?
What?
Come
what would
on.
You give? What would you give?
What would I give?
Yeah. What would you give?
A lot. Honestly, damn these guys that just like grow gray and like have beautiful locks and stuff.
Oh, I know.
Like, yeah, I'm just like, I was bald when I was like 25. Oh, yeah.
I went earlier, man. I was running around in the rain playing with friends when I was, it sounds like I was like eight.
Oh, yeah.
No,
I've but seen
I was,
that, dude. I've yeah. seen that.
Like, oh, dude.
They get the wet yes. hair and the scalp yes. shining through.
Yes. And I went into the bathroom. This was when I was in the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. I went into the bathroom, you know, and I looked at myself in the mirror and I looked like the freaking Crypt Keeper from HBO. Do you ever see, you know what I'm talking about? Where like the hair was coming down the streaky and the scalp all through it. I was like, oh my God. Dude, I was 20. 2-0.
Did you look at the child catcher from Chi Chi Bang Bang?
Yes. I mean, I don't know, but yes.
I don't know either. Like, he was a creepy looking dude. I don't know if he was like looking bald. I don't know. If he didn't have that hair, it would have been cool if he did. Anyway, yeah. Dude, have we missed anything out?
Yeah, we have. Our favorite. What's your favorite YouTube bassline? Show me how to play it.
My favorite, I'm not going to show you. I'm going to let Adam show you. I'm going to let Adam show you. Just check this out. I've got this great clip. So it's New Year's Day. Let me just share my screen.
Oh, the chorus.
Pick, dude. Chorus. Live at Red Rocks. The first time I watched this, it was at my first girlfriend's house.
Really?
13 years old, man.
That's such a great bass line. I mean, this is really to the era of the chorus pedal, right? Like,
yeah.
This is absolutely... Yep.
Just so simple, right? Just
yeah.
a major third. Actually, minor third. So it starts with a minor third. Major third. And then a minor third.
Yep.
So, like, just signature sound, especially with that chorus as well. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
What about you?
My favorite, I mean, that is really, that bass line is incredible. But the one that it was the first bass line I ever learned. I heard the song. I loved the song. It was With or Without You. My dad was a huge U2 fan, Joshua Tree. And I remember hating it when I first heard it.
Is your dad a U2 fan?
Yeah, my dad was a big U2 fan. He loved the Joshua
Allison.
Tree. Yeah,
have you told Bob Allison that we've been just chilling?
You well, know, you too. I need to tell him.
You haven't told him.
Sorry, Dad. What? I'll tell him. I mean, we just got back.
Look, Mr. Bob Allison, we've just been chilling with you two here. That's like, you could blow his mind.
I mean, you know, he would play that record. And for whatever reason, I always felt like as a kid, Bono sounded too sentimental to me. It was almost like too emotional sounding for me. And I was like kind of made uncomfortable by it. But then really? As I got older, yes. Then as I got older, I loved it. But the first bass line I ever learned, I hunted till I found the notes. You know, I just like had to hunt. I played it all on the E string. That's the very first bass line I ever learned.
Oh.
And I mean, the most popular chord progression of all time.
That's the one that we were playing before when the that's the one that we showed before.
Yeah. And I just think like that bass line and his sound on that original record. He plays it hard. Like Scott says, he sort of swings through. But the way I heard it was sort of like subtle and almost kind of muted and pulsing instead of like aggressive rock and roll. Obviously, you know, once you made it to stadiums, right, your playing changes. But I sort of felt like his approach on that record was more kind of just like this thrum pulse in the background that everything built on. And I have been influenced by that on various, you know, like when I'm in studios and there needs to be a vibe, sometimes just playing a note sets up a vibe, you know? Yeah. Like if you just do that and the drummer comes in, it gives something to build on, and Adam Clayton taught me that.
Yeah, and they're a really interesting band, especially from a bass perspective as well, just because there's like the guitar is so, it's like a massive wash, isn't it? It's just this like ginormous wash of delay and awesomeness. So really, Adam creates a lot of movement underneath that with his bass lines. And I think that, there's a, like from a compositional standpoint and bass standpoint, they're just such a great band to listen to.
Yes.
Oh, next time, dude. We're going to embrace.
Bring it in. You never want to be the guy that initiates the embrace. You know, what if I turned to you teary and went, hug, buddy, and you weren't feeling it? Oh, God. Oh, no, dude,
I think the opposite. You want to be the guy that embraces it. You want to be the guy. Anyway, let's call it.
I just need to get over it. I need to get over myself.
Dude, we're going to embrace next time I see you. Anyway, dude, thank you so much. Remember the bass player's agreement. Come on. Yeah, absolutely.
Take my hand. Yes.
Smash that subscribe button. Be part of our mission to get to 1.5 million subscribers by the end of the year if you enjoy our content. And we'll see you next time. Take it easy. Bye.
Take care, everybody.